It's a really, really delicate time. And what we're seeing in the West is seemingly an inability to restore order. Let's take the Red Sea, for example. How have Houthi rebels managed to basically shut down commerce in the Red Sea?
Well, they're doing it because they're backed by Iran and they've had weapons provided them to Iran. And, you know, between the 19th of November and last weekend, they'd made 26 attacks. We'd given warning after warning, but we hadn't taken action. We have now taken action. We've demonstrated we're prepared to back our words and warnings with actions. And I believe that will make a difference.
You were part of the strikes that took place more recently with the United States. You remember about 10 years ago that you had to shelve strikes in Syria because of a vote in Parliament. Just as a principle, is that something you think should be happening when the UK takes military decisions?
I think if you're taking urgent and immediate action, I think it's perfectly acceptable for the government to act. And of course, you've got to weigh up the operational security with consulting Parliament. But the warnings were given in Parliament. Parliamentarians were perfectly aware of what could well happen. And now there's been a statement in Parliament, and that's entirely right. Of course, there was the situation with Syria many years ago. I'd point also, we have taken action with Americans and others to get rid of the ISIL threat that was there in Syria and Iraq, and that was a very successful intervention. But clearly, look, this is about freedom of navigation. We want to have the freedom of navigation. It's vital not just for our economy, but for every economy in the world, including some of the poorest countries.
Including
and you can't
China.
Have a situation...
Including China, just to jump in. And it's interesting to me that this could have huge consequences for trade in China. And yet China's not a part of what took place in the last week. Why aren't they getting involved?
Well, China did sign up to the UN Security Council resolution that condemned the Houthi attacks and said that nations had a right to self-defense. And so I think that is progress. But yes, if you're asking, is Britain a country that is prepared to stand up and work with allies and take action if we have the capabilities and if we can help? Yes, we are, because we think it's important that you don't always leave America to act alone.
Will the conflict continue in the Red Sea until there's a ceasefire in Gaza?
Well, obviously, you've got to look at all of these different things that are happening in the Middle East. I think the important thing is to try and deal with each of them. I don't think it was possible to go on allowing these attacks to continue in the Red Sea. But at the same time, yes, of course, we want to work towards a resolution of the situation in Gaza. I've been very clear that should involve an immediate humanitarian pause. We need to get aid in. We need to get hostages out. That requires a pause. And of course, we've talked about a sustainable ceasefire because you've got to get rid of Hamas and its ability to rain down terror on Israel. But the best outcome would be moving from that pause to a sustainable ceasefire without a return to hostilities, without more destruction. But for that to happen, a number of things would have to take place. We'd have to see the Hamas leadership come out of Gaza. You'd have to see the hostage situation being resolved and resolved very rapidly. You'd have to make sure that Hamas was no longer capable of doing rocket and terrorist attacks onto Israel. You'd have to start working out who's going to govern Gaza and how, a new Palestinian authority. But I think that should be the ambition. That should be the plan, moving from an immediate cessation to deal with hostages, which is a pause, and moving from that into a sustainable ceasefire.
Whether it's Hamas, whether it's Lebanese Hezbollah, whether it's Houthis, all of these roads lead to Tehran. Where is going to be the Western response to Iran?
Well, we have delivered very tough messages to Iran, including I had a discussion with the foreign minister last week. And obviously, there's a number of sanctions and other measures already in place. But I think it's absolutely vital that we send a very clear and unequivocal message to Iran that its behavior in supporting these proxies, whether it's Hamas or Hezbollah or indeed the Iranian armed groups in Iraq and Syria, its behavior is unacceptable, and we need to make sure that there will be consequences for this behavior in terms of sanctions.
But as clear as, say, actually striking a leadership like Qasem Soleimani?
No, I think what we need to look at is all the tools that we have in the toolbox. And obviously, we have been using, for instance, sanctions against a number of people in Iran, and we need to look at how we can step that up if this behavior continues.
There's a real question here as the leadership, and you're saying that there needs to be pretty strong measures taken, this needs to get resolved, etc. And then you see protests flooding the streets of London with all these people coming out to support Hamas, to support, yes, the Palestinian people, but also to really protest some of these actions. How does that complicate your job if you're losing a lot of the popular support?
Well, I wouldn't. Look, these protests, look, a lot of people feel very strongly about what's happening in Gaza, and I completely understand that, because we have seen a huge loss of life. We've seen a lot of destruction. I support Israel's right to act in self-defense. I understand why they have to get rid of Hamas, but we all want to see fewer civilian casualties, less destruction. As I've said, I think there is a pathway to try and deal with this. We have a right to protest in our country. People are free to come out onto the streets and make their views known. But we have to work out what's the right thing to do to bring this to a conclusion. So it's often tempting in foreign policy to say the easy thing, let's just have a ceasefire that's comprehensive right now. But it won't work unless you deal with the problem of Hamas. And actually, the thing that so many of those protesters want, which I want, which is a two-state solution where you have Israel and Palestine side by side, you'll never get that if Hamas are still in Gaza launching rockets capable of carrying out terrorist attacks. A two-state solution requires the bringing to the end of that situation.
I know you have to go. I want to squeeze in another question. Don't let me down, because I always say that British politicians have much thicker skin than American politicians do. So forgive the bluntness of this question. There is a 20-point gap between the Conservative Party and Labour. If we were to have an election right now, polls indicate your party would get absolutely trounced. What do you think is behind that? Do you think it's poor policy preferences or incompetence?
I remember sitting probably in a chair like this in 2013-14 when I was Prime Minister. We were way behind in the polls. Everyone had written us off. They were saying, you know, start thinking about packing your bags. And we won that 2015 election. And we won it because we had a strong team with a clear plan. And that's what we've got now. We've got a very capable Prime Minister with a very strong team and a clear plan on how you deal with everything from illegal migration to growing the economy to sorting out some of these problems in terms of international security we've been discussing about. I didn't just come back into this government to come to great foreign gatherings like this and talk about foreign affairs, vital though that is. I came back as a full member of the team because I really believe in this team.